The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Not a good morning for the people of Ukraine, who there are now currently are facing a full-scale Russian invasion.
The ground assault has begun, and it's coming in on four axes.
Reported dead, as you see that explosion there, and even reports that civilians are issued weapons or guns to defend themselves if they want to stay in their country.
Куди ховатися? Куди? Скажіть, будь ласка.
Когда не думала, что такое может быть.
How did we get to this point in the 21st century where the war is being waged and people are dying in Europe? The security architecture of our world is brittle, it is obsolete.
Peace on our continent has been shattered. We now have war in Europe.
These troops you can see over here, they are Russian airborne forces. They have taken this airport.
I just hope this is not the beginning of World War III.
Dear compatriots, I am confident that the soldiers and officers of the Russian armed forces devoted to their country will professionally and courageously fulfill their duty. Our goal is to protect people who have been subjected to abuse and genocide by the Ukrainian regime for 8 years. And for this, we will strive to demilitarize and denazify Ukraine, as well as bring to justice those who committed numerous bloody crimes against peaceful residents.
And so we now know what Vladimir Putin's true intentions are or were from the beginning. Full-scale attack. It's underway. Just a few days ago, his spokesman, by the way, he said that there was no point of Russia attacking someone. He urged Western nations to come to reason. Come on. We have no interest. He actually said this. Let's be reminded that throughout its history, Russia has never attacked anyone. That's the Russian spokesperson, the Russian ambassador to the United States. He said on Face the Nation just over the weekend, there is no invasion and there are no such plans. And now, full-scale invasion, war, has come to Europe. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining our growing audience. You can get to our live audio stream at CRN Digital Talk Radio, Channel 3 on that platform. Of course, to get to the video stream of this show, we offer it exclusively at our very own website, Tomorrow's News Today. Don't forget about reading the articles at the website. Lots of powerful articles posted even as we speak, but you can get to the live audio stream, video stream rather, at thetrumpet.com. Just go to thetrumpet.com/live, and you can get to the live stream. Plays at 11 a.m. here in Oklahoma time, Central Standard Time in the United States. And, of course, you can get to the podcasts that are posted after the fact as well if you'd like to listen on demand. It wasn't that long ago when we were told that Donald Trump was going to be starting World War III at any moment because of an angry tweet that was going to trigger World War III. And now here is Europe on the brink. And all the experts in the West, whether at NATO, in the fake Biden administration, they had all the experts working in full force. On the one hand saying, attack is imminent. Attack's going to happen on such and such day. And then on the other hand saying, we've got everything under control. The diplomacy is working. The sanctions are really having an impact. Thomas Friedman, he writes for the New York Times. He tweeted out 9 days ago, The Ukraine story is far from over, but if Vladimir Putin opts to back away from invading Ukraine, even temporarily, it's because Joe Biden has matched every Putin chess move with an effective counter of his own. I mean, Joe Biden is brilliant. He's navigating his way through this crisis. And Thomas Friedman, I mean, he couldn't be more proud of him. Listen to the propaganda chief at the White House, Jen Psaki. Listen to what she said yesterday regarding Biden's strategy against Russia. Clip 11.
And we made the assessment, others can have different assessments, that this would be the way to achieve the outcome that we've now achieved. Others can have different assessments. There's no proof or evidence that their approach would have worked. Ours has worked.
Yeah, our approach has worked. Everything's worked. Tell that to Ukrainians who are being slaughtered this morning. Tell that to the ordinary citizens of Ukraine who are lining up the highways trying to get out into northern Ukraine or maybe flee into Poland. I mean, we could have a refugee crisis that the nation of Poland hasn't seen for decades, centuries maybe. You think Europe is waking up to the fact that there's a real existential threat to the East? There's no strong leadership in Europe. Not yet. There will be. It's prophesied. And obviously, there's no strong leadership in the United States. I mean, the only strength that they show is when they attack their political opponents at home. You saw it with Justin Trudeau. You saw it. You see it with Biden. You saw it with Obama. But when it comes to confronting actual tyrants abroad, well, that's when they project weakness. That's when they appease and surrender. And really, when you turn on the cable talk shows now, and all that they can, really the only thing that gets them really hot under the collar is that some Republican wouldn't come out and denounce Vladimir Putin. You know, Tucker Carlson's pro-Putin. That's really their message. Look, you've got a Democrat in the White House. You've got Democrats controlling the House. You've got Democrats controlling the Senate. You've got the woke general, General Milley at the Pentagon. You got everybody you need. So show us if Putin is as dangerous as you say he is. And he is. But what are they doing? The Bible says to judge by fruits. Here the world is exploding in violence. And you've got the chief propaganda, the chief propagandist at the White House basically saying, listen, it's just like Afghanistan. Everything's working. Our policies work. They can never fail. Listen to Nancy Pelosi as she talks about Biden's approach to this crisis. Clip 12.
We're very proud of our vice president whose leadership has been outstanding, and the message was delivered to the conference by the vice president. It was well received. It was unifying. It was firm in terms of how we would work together for sanctions should there be an invasion of Ukraine.
He's just given us wonderful leadership. He went over there, or Vice President Kamala Harris went over there, brought all of Europe together. There's unity in these sanctions that we're applying to Russia. And here Vladimir Putin waltzes right into the heart of Ukraine. I mean, we're still in the midst of the fog of war. We'll find out what headlines are accurate and which ones aren't as far as casualty count goes, and whether or not Putin is concentrating more on the south part of Ukraine and building the land bridge connecting to Crimea or whatever, or if he's going all the way to Kiev, if he's going to topple the government of Zelensky. We'll find out some of those details soon enough. But just for a moment, though, consider the catastrophic, and yet another catastrophic foreign policy failure for Joe Obama, for the fake Joe Biden presidency. Look at what has happened since they pulled off the election steal less than a year and a half ago. It's as Donald Trump says every time that he gets the chance. They're destroying the country. They really are destroying the country. And the authoritarians around the world, they see this as their opportunity. You can be sure China's taking note. China's going to devour Taiwan at some point. If they see Putin get away with this, and it's so easy, it's just so easy. Listen to the Associated Press's Matt Lee as he grills the State Department spokesman yesterday on why they didn't do something sooner to stop Putin. Clip three.
On Nord Stream 2, you guys have been saying for months, indeed for over a year, since the waivers were first granted, that in fact this gave you additional leverage withholding the sanctions did, and would serve as a deterrent. Clearly, it didn't provide you with any leverage at all that we can tell, because of what you just said in your opening statement about the invasion beginning. So, you know, how do you explain to people why you didn't impose these sanctions earlier?
Yeah, why didn't you do something earlier? If you knew when the attack was coming, I mean, they had all their spokespeople out there saying, yeah, the last week they said, okay, the attack's happening on Wednesday. They were, I guess, a week off. But if they knew this was happening, why didn't they stop it? Like I said, they control all the agencies of power in the United States. Congress, the White House, the Pentagon, the State Department, CIA, FBI. They've got it all. And do you think Vladimir Putin is shaking in his boots? It's just the opposite. He knows there's no strong man in Europe, not yet. And there's no strong man in the White House. The Daily Mail describing the events of last night. 50 Russian troops killed, according to Ukraine. So again, you've got the back and forth as to what's actually happening. Moscow boasted of taking over full control of the skies. Ukrainian border guards said that they had come under attack by heavy artillery, tanks, and troops from Russia and Belarus, as Belarusian dictator Lukashenko threw his forces into the fight, though he denied taking part. And then it refers to Zelensky, the president of Ukraine. In an address to the nation on Thursday morning, he said the history of Ukraine has now changed forever, and that Russia has embarked on the path of evil, comparing the Russian attack to Hitler's forces in World War II. But he vowed to fight back, saying the military has already inflicted serious losses on Russia. Here's a little bit from the Ukrainian president through a translator from earlier today, clip one.
Dear Ukrainian citizens, this morning President Putin announced a special military operation in Donbass. Russia carried out strikes on our military infrastructure and our border guardsmen, border guard divisions. In many Ukrainian cities, explosions were heard. We have introduced martial law across all territories in our country. Today, calm is needed from each of you. If you can, please stay at home. We are working. The army is working. The whole security and defense sector is working. I will talk to you soon. Don't panic. We are strong. We are ready for everything. We will win over anyone because we are Ukraine.
Yet another fairly major world power declaring martial law. I mean, Canada did it for crazy politically motivated reasons a week and a half ago. But now here comes Ukraine. Its president declaring martial law. The Daily Mail article I mentioned, it continued. Zelensky called on all Ukrainian citizens willing to defend their homeland to step forward, saying guns will be issued to everyone who wants one. He's issuing guns to ordinary citizens so that they can shoot Russians. This is happening in Eastern Europe. They're ready to fight, it seems. There's a lot of ordinary citizens that are making for the highways and heading north. We'll see how courageous the citizens of Ukraine are, or its army is. He's saying the right things, I suppose, depending on how you look at it. But we'll see, because Putin's taking the fight to them for sure. Putin, in his speech last night, I mean, he addressed everything. He was addressing the soldiers of Ukraine's army. He addressed the Russian soldiers. He addressed NATO. He addressed Western nations. And at one point, he said this: as for the military sphere, modern Russia, even after the collapse of the USSR, as we know, Putin wants to rebuild the Soviet Union. He wants to raise the ruins of the great empire. He talks about some of this history here. even after the collapse of the USSR and the loss of a significant part of its potential, is today one of the most powerful nuclear powers in the world. He says in his speech last night that Russia's one of the most powerful nuclear powers in the world. It says, and moreover, has certain advantages in a number of the latest types of weapons. And listen to this threat. In this regard, no one should have any doubts that a direct attack on our country will lead to defeat and dire consequences for any potential aggressor. Here's Vladimir Putin basically threatening nuclear war to anyone that would come to Ukraine's defense militarily. And so you can be sure Western nations, they're going to steer clear of this. I mean, they may send in the weapons, they'll slap down the sanctions, and that's it. In Russia, I think one of the Fox commentators last night was saying, look, Russia lives with sanctions all the time. That's just the status quo as far as they're concerned. And then these Western leaders coming forward and acting like, we've still got the leverage here. We're going to really lower the boom on Vladimir Putin. And he's waltzing his way right on through. Look, yesterday we went through some of the prophecies and what the trumpet has said. Tomorrow's news today, what we said as far back as 2008, 2014, and 15. I've got some sound bites from Key of David programs coming up here in just a second. But just think for a moment about the lack of leadership in Europe. Emmanuel Macron, I guess since Angela Merkel stepped down, he's rising to the fore as, I guess, the most prominent leader. But he's not the Daniel 8 man. And Germany's projecting a fair bit of weakness right now as far as leadership is concerned. And you've got all of these commentators just clamoring for strength, boldness. Europe doesn't have it. And so Putin, as he sees that weakness in Europe and the United States, this is his opportunity. And it doesn't matter if just a few days ago he says to the world, of course I'm not, we're just lining our troops up to the borders. That's all. We would never attack anybody. And then, as if on cue, just a few days later, he attacks. My father wrote this article, 2015, A Strong German Leader is Imminent. It says, strong leaders are rising on the world scene today in several nations, including Russia, China, and Iran. But what about Europe? What about Germany? It says Germany does not have a strong leader. Many critics have been voicing this view quite often lately. However, there are several signs in world news that a strong leader is about to rise on the scene. And he refers to Daniel 8, the prophecies there. You can see the booklet there. If you don't have that booklet, call our operators and request your free copy. It's 1-866-930-3024. That's a toll-free number here in the United States and in Canada. A strong German leader is imminent. My father said, when he comes to power, this world will be shocked as it has never been shocked before. He's not in power yet. There's nobody there in Europe to push back against Putin's advance. And so these dictators are on the march. As I said, China's paying close attention to how this plays out. Ben Shapiro, the conservative commentator, he tweeted out, Russia and China are focused on expanding their spheres of influence via aggressive action. The West is focused on expanding its national debt and exploding the gender binary. Yeah, we're woke in the West. We're spending money like drunken sailors in the West. And meanwhile, Russia, China, Iran, they're expanding their spheres of influence. They're expanding their empires. There's an article at thetrumpet.com right now on the front page. The Ukraine crisis demands a strong leader. This is only going to have them, as I say, clamoring all the more for strength in Europe to counter this aggression from Putin. The Trumpet article says various German language media outlets agree that Russian President Vladimir Putin has proved Europe needs an overarching leader. The dilemma started when Europe negotiated with Russia. The Austrian paper Der Standard wrote on February 10, the EU finally needs a leader who can deal with Putin and Biden on equal footing. Come on, we need really what they want. They want someone, a strong personality, more like Donald Trump, not Joe Biden. But they want the same clout that Putin's projecting, that generally speaking the president of the White House projects. It says here, after the invasion, one of Germany's most distinguished publicists and commentators, Wolfram Weimar, delivered a very similar message in his article, "The Would-Be Leader Demonstrates Europe's Weakness." He quotes him here, "Putin's policy of aggression exposes the weakness of the European Union. Militarily, it's entirely dependent on the United States, and politically without leadership. London is going its own way with Brexit. Berlin's traffic light government seems fickle. Macron is demonstratively taking over Europe's leadership role, which was held by Angela Merkel for 16 years. But he has his very own ideas in mind." And then the article at the Trumpet says, Weimar noted that Putin sees Europe's current fragility and seeks to exploit it. Is he ever exploiting it? This fragile alliance, NATO, even the European Union, and we know about the European Union, we haven't even talked about this recently, that it's going to downsize to 10 nations. That's prophesied, Revelation 17. It's going to downsize to 10 nations, and then there's going to be a Daniel 8 man heading it up. It'll project real strength. It'll be bold. And of course, it'll lead to World War III. Yesterday, I referred to this article from Jeremiah Jacques about just how the Trumpet has been spot on from the very beginning. Going back to the crisis with Georgia in 2008. And then, of course, Russia's march on Crimea in 2014, during the Obama years, by the way. And then some relatively quiet time for 4 years during Trump's presidency. And then now here they are on the advance, on the march again. Listen to my father from a Key of David program. This is from January 4th, 2014. He's talking about the Ukraine crisis. That's when Russia marched on Crimea. And my father talked about how that this crisis is prophesied. This is clip 4.
There has been a supreme crisis in the country of Ukraine, located between Russia and Europe. And some of our very best media journalists have said this is a monumental crisis. Now, you don't hear too much about it, but it is nevertheless something that is going to change the course of world history. It's going to do that, and it's going to take us a giant step closer to World War III, and you're going to see that happen.
That's from 2014, or the tag there on the footage said 2013, so right around that time period. And he was talking in this program a fair bit about a prophecy in Ezekiel 38. We'll look at a couple verses there at the moment. It's expounded upon in this booklet I showed you yesterday. The prophesied Prince of Rosh. You see the picture there of Vladimir Putin. I also referred to Russia and China in prophecy on yesterday's program. Both of these books, they go together like hand in glove. Request them from our operators. They're standing by. None of our literature. We offer it all freely. None of it costs you a thing. I mean, it's been paid for by others who've made sacrifices for this work. But there's no cost, no obligation for you. These verses in Ezekiel 38, notice it says, verse 1, "And the word of the Eternal came unto me, saying, Son of man, set your face against Gog and the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal, and prophesy against him." You can see in verses 8 and 16 of this chapter that it's obviously a prophecy for the end time, for the last days. And Gog is referring, just to quickly run through this, Gog refers to Russia. The land of Magog would include other nations, including China. Meshach, though, that's just another name for Moscow. And Tubal, I mean, there's a city in Russia that goes about by that same name as well. So it's clearly referring to Russia. And the key word there, The other fascinating thing about verse 2 in particular is the word chief, which comes from the Hebrew word Rosh, the prince of Rosh. I'll leave it to you to either get the booklet or to study into the Hebrew language or words used in these first two verses. But there is a prince of Rosh, and he's going to preside over this this Asian conglomerate that factors into Bible prophecy in the very last days, and even during the Great Tribulation. God says, you take a message to this prince of Rosh, you deliver a warning, even to Russia. Here again is my father from that program, clip 5.
Just remember, back in 2005, the Russian president Vladimir Putin called the demise of the Soviet Empire the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the century. Now, almost everybody in the West thought just the opposite. But if the Ukraine were to ally itself with Europe, let me tell you, that would really diminish the power of Vladimir Putin. And he knows that and sees that, and that whole Soviet Empire architecture was built around the Ukraine being a part of it. Russia has its biggest fleet, naval fleet, in Ukraine to this day. Now, you can see that if they have their largest military base outside of Russia there in the Ukraine, you can see why Putin wants that country so much into the Soviet Empire or the Russian Empire.
He mentioned there what Putin had said back in 2005, this great catastrophe of the Soviet Union losing its empire. We were telling you about Putin's designs on rebuilding the empire years and years and years ago. You listen to some of the commentators today, they're just now getting around to that statement from 2005. The Trumpet Magazine, Tomorrow's News, today. Here's one last clip from that program there at the end of 2013, clip 6.
But the goal of Vladimir Putin is to restore the Soviet Union. That's his dream. And in this case, it includes the Ukraine. And that's what Ezekiel 38 verses 1 and 2 is all about. That's what it's all about.
That's really a pretty amazing forecast. I mean, he's going through Ezekiel 38, which we just read for you. But the forecast following Georgia in 2008, and as I mentioned to you yesterday, that was, as my father said then, that was just the beginning. Ukraine is next. Ukraine is next. That's what my father was saying in 2008. And then follow the chronology, 2014, the ongoing war between Ukraine and Russia from 2014 to today, particularly in the Donbass region. And then this week, Russian troops, they file into Donbass, and now they are on the march throughout Ukraine. There was another program. This is from the end of 2016. So this is about 5-6 years ago. And the program is The Prophesied Prince of Russia. It's obviously content that promotes this booklet that I just mentioned a while back. This is clip 7.
So this prophecy, if you think about it, indicates that they may take some more of those nations in that former Soviet Union. And there's a reason why Vladimir Putin is doing that, because he thought that was the greatest time of Russia's glory in this modern age. That's the way he thinks. Now, he's going to be, I think, taking over some more of those countries that were in that area.
Now, the reason he gave us that forecast is because if you look through all of the language in Ezekiel 38 verses 1 and 2, all of those names, I mean, it implies that this is a huge territory. And so based on that, my father said, look, Russia, obviously, it was downsized significantly following the breakup of the Soviet Union. Back in 1990-ish, that time period, 1990, 1991. Well, now it's regaining some of those satellite nations. Little by little, piece by piece. Nobody's ever stopped him. Nobody's ever stood up to him. Again, aside from just the slap on the wrist, the usual sanctions and such. Listen to this last clip from that same program at the end of 2016, clip 8.
Now, just to give you an idea, all the way back in 2008, here's what I wrote in the Trumpet. Russia's attack on Georgia in August marks the beginning of a dangerous new era in history. This was the first military strike of a rising Asia superpower, and there will be more. Well, now, how could I know that? Well, and then I went on to ask, will a crisis occur over Ukraine? That area is the breadbasket of Russia, and surely it is willing to wage war over that as well. And what has happened to Ukraine since I said that about 9 years ago? Well, now they control Ukraine and have absolute control of a great portion of it.
That was obviously the 2016 show, but there he was going back to the Georgia invasion and what has happened since 2008, just taking us through some of the history, which has been covered in our Trumpet magazine. Spot on, as I say, tomorrow's news today, last night on Fox News, as the invasion was starting, Donald Trump was on the phone with Laura Ingraham, and she asked for his reaction to these earth-shaking events. This is clip 9.
The way it started, I really don't believe he wanted to do this initially. I think he wanted to do something and negotiate, and it just got worse and worse, and then he saw the weakness. And you know, it really started, I think, with the weakness in Afghanistan, the way they pulled out of Afghanistan. I really believe that's where he started thinking, you know, he can do this.
He's exactly right. He saw the weakness. He saw that as an opportunity. There's no one that's going to stop me. Not from Europe, not from the United States. They've got enough of their own problems. Sanctions, all right, we can live with that. We'd live with that for decades. And they saw the humiliation of that evacuation of Afghanistan in August of last year. The whole world saw this. And to hear the Biden people carry on about how perfect that was, even as the rest of the world was laughing at America's demise. Victor Davis Hanson, he had a piece at American Greatness on Putin's predictabilities. It's an excellent article. He says, for all his caginess, dissimulation, and opportunism, Vladimir Putin is more or less predictable. Putin's aims? The Russian president's two-decade dilemma has been how to reclaim the prestige and power of the former Soviet Union. See, we've been right on that for decades. We've been talking about, look, this is his aim. He wants to rebuild the old former Soviet Union. But how do you do this with only 75% of the country's former territory and 140 million fewer people? I mean, they lost that empire. It says, when does he strike? First, listen to this. First, Putin moves on neighboring former Soviet republics when the world price of oil is high and his coffers are full. We talked about this some yesterday. So he went into Georgia in 2008 and into eastern Ukraine and Crimea in 2014 when he thought he had the financial wherewithal and the public support to do so. But when the world is awash in oil, prices dip. And the United States reigns as the largest gas and oil producer. He hesitates. That's the way it was during the Trump years. Trump was drilling. He was building pipes, not from Germany to Russia, but between Canada and the United States. We were energy independent. The cost for barrels of oil plummeted. And this puts Russia, this puts Iran, it puts Saudi Arabia in a difficult position. The money's not just flowing in to these nations. But when the cost for oil, you might have seen headlines this morning, it's up over $100. It was $41, as we said yesterday, when they completed the election steal on November 3rd, 2020. Not even a year and a half ago. Now it's up over $100. Could go a lot higher because of this crisis. And the higher it goes, the more money Russia makes on selling oil. Isn't this amazing? It says, but when the world is awash in oil, prices dip, and the United States reigns as the largest gas and oil producer, he hesitates. So he remained static between 2017 and 2020. That happens to be when Donald Trump was in the White House, driving oil prices down, just breathing life into the U.S. economy, creating jobs. And, oh, yeah, going over to Europe saying to those NATO member nations, hey, you guys got to pay your fair share. And as much as they hated him and resented him for that, you know, they actually put more money in a unified contributing way. They put more money into Europeans' defense systems. And when that happens, Putin backs off. I mean, here, this is just, again, 101 in international relations. When there's strength projected by the European alliance, then Putin is a little more careful. Listen to this from President Trump in 2008. He's sitting down in front of this NATO general secretary, who's just praising him, by the way, even though they didn't like what Trump was saying publicly. Look, you're not even paying your 2%. You got to pay up. We all do. We're not just going to fund this for everyone in Europe. That's the way it had been going on for decades. Listen to the way this former president, actually he's the current president too, because the other one's illegitimate. But listen to the way Donald Trump spoke to this NATO general and what he said about Germany and about Russia. And then ask yourself, who's the real Russian stooge? Who's the real communist? Who's the real agent that's there to help Putin expand his empire? This, as I say, was from 2018, clip two.
Well, I have to say, I think it's very sad when Germany makes a massive oil and gas deal with Russia, where you're supposed to be guarding against Russia, and Germany goes out and pays billions and billions of dollars a year to Russia. So we're protecting Germany, we're protecting France, we're protecting all of these countries. And then numerous of the countries go out and make a pipeline deal with Russia where they're paying billions of dollars into the coffers of Russia. So we're supposed to protect you against Russia, but they're paying billions of dollars to Russia. And I think that's very inappropriate. And the former chancellor of Germany is the head of the pipeline company that's supplying the gas. Ultimately, Germany will have almost 70% of their country controlled by Russia with natural gas. So you tell me, is that appropriate? I mean, I've been complaining about this from the time I got in. It should have never been allowed to have happened.
He was complaining about it from the time he became president. I mean, who's standing toe-to-toe with Putin? And not just Putin, the leaders in Europe. It's certainly not Joe Biden. If he's so tough, if he's the only one that goes toe-to-toe with Putin, well, then put Putin in his place like you did Corn Pop. He hasn't done anything. He won't do anything. And Putin knows it. Victor Davis Hanson in this piece, it says, in 2008, the United States was battered by sky-high oil prices and bogged down in Iraq and Afghanistan. Then between 2009 and 2016, President Obama went on an apology tour, cut defense spending, boasted of a new Russian reset. Remember this history? This is important. It's not even that long ago. Remember the big Russian reset? Yeah, we're going to be friends with Russia. Hillary, she took the big reset button over there that didn't say reset. Remember that? It says it contextualized Iranian and North Korean aggression and begged Putin to behave until Obama was reelected in 2012. Who can forget that? When Obama leaned over and said to Medvedev, you know, Putin's puppet at the time, just wait until after the election, I'll have a little more flexibility and I can give you what you want. Who's the real communist agents here? In exchange for dismantling U.S. missile defense programs in Eastern Europe. Who's really responsible for dismantling Eastern Europe's defenses? And who was responsible for building them up and strengthening them? It says here, Obama then invited Russia into the Middle East after a 40-year absence. Yeah, come on in. We're leaving the Middle East. Russia, you can have it. You can expand your empire in that direction. Thanks, Obama. Putin loved Obama. He loves Biden. And he was afraid of Trump. Or at least he feared him. It says, as a result, during all those years, Putin formally invaded Georgia, eastern Ukraine, and Crimea. But between 2017 and 20, Putin was quieter. That's just the truth. And Jen Psaki and any of the other ones, Thomas Friedman, they can get up and lie about it if they want to. They can pretend that as you heard on some of those clips from yesterday, that Putin didn't move on Ukraine during the Trump years because of this, this, and this. And really, he's moving on them now, not because of Biden, but because of Trump. It says here, in 2018, the Trump administration killed attacking Russian mercenaries in Syria. It got out of an unfavorable missile deal with Russia in 2019. It sold offensive weapons to Ukraine. It maintained sanctions on Russian oligarchs, and it greatly increased defense spending. No surprise that Putin then did not threaten his neighbors with military mobilizations on their borders. Exposes the real history here, the true history here. It exposes all the lies of Trump-Russia collusion. See, they still can't let that go, can they? They still, even when there's war in Europe, a hot war in Europe, they still look at Donald Trump as the main story. He's the storyline. The Republicans who, they're not on board with resisting against Putin the way that they should be. Well, okay, then resist him. Do something to stop him. The people that are arguing for no action are basically saying, we want action at our southern border. We don't want to send our boys over to Ukraine to die for Ukraine. But we want to step back and look at the bigger picture here. What is the significance of all this prophetically? Well, I've given you that. And we've got plenty more literature that can help you in your study. Here's President Trump again in his interview last night as he's reacting to these earth-shaking events. Clip 10.
He was going to be satisfied with a peace, and now he sees the weakness and the incompetence and the stupidity of this administration. And as an American, I'm angry about it and I'm saddened by it. And it all happened because of a rigged election. This would have never happened. And that includes inflation, and that includes millions of people pouring in on a monthly basis, far more than 3 million people. And they're coming from 129 different countries. We have no idea what's happening, and they're destroying our country.
Fox isn't going to like that. The former president saying that this is all happening because of a rigged election. Just as I've been saying this week, try to wrap your mind around the earth-shaking events that have happened since November 3rd, 2020. We had all of the clips of Justin Trudeau lined up to lead off the show yesterday afternoon. And then you get home and receive news of this invasion of Ukraine. These past 2 weeks, it's like there's 5 years of world events compressed into 13 or 14 days. Daniel 12 talks about the countdown, and it even gets into days, numbering days. Jesus, of course, prophesied of these end time events leading to the return of Christ, and how that, you know, you might not know the exact day, but you're going to know when it's at the door. I mean, it's near the door here. And we've got to get ourselves ready for Christ's return. Speaking of those Trudeau clips yesterday, you know what's happened. You've been watching this show over the last week and a half. Trudeau invoking those emergency powers, martial law, not because Russians are invading his nation, but because a trucker is dancing in the street. Because the trucker's son is jumping up and down in a bouncy castle. Because vehicles were honking their horns. And so he lowered the boom. He's outraged by what Putin is doing. But he thinks everything he did over the past 2 weeks is just perfect. Well, he's feeling the heat, as is Joe Biden. Trudeau's feeling the heat because he made an abrupt turnaround yesterday. He got Parliament support, at least at the House. It wasn't looking like there might be enough support in the Senate. There's a lot that factors into his abrupt about-face. But he said, look, this is still a state of emergency. It's still dangerous. We've got to stop any future protests. That was Monday and Tuesday. And then we get to Wednesday and he says, emergency over, and we're going to revoke the Emergencies Act that we invoked the week before. Here's Trudeau from yesterday, clip 14.
And today, after careful consideration, we're ready to confirm that the situation is no longer an emergency. Therefore, the federal government will be ending the use of the Emergencies Act.
And as it happens, this is coming right at a time when there's some pretty damning evidence coming out, being talked about at Parliament. Senators who are upset, senators who see this invoking of the Emergencies Act as just purely politically motivated, to say nothing of the panic that set in his government over the banking crisis. As I said yesterday, the run on the banks. If you were a big investor and you had a lot of money in a Canadian bank, I mean, what would you do if one prime minister comes along and says, you know what, if that bank's going in a direction that I don't like, I could freeze it? There's a lot going on behind the scenes that we don't necessarily know about. I was hoping to get into more of it, read more of it this morning, but it's just to where every day, it's almost like we're overtaken by just the pace, the accelerated pace of events, prophesied events. He was asked yesterday, by the way, after his statement, and then the reporters chimed in and said, one of them asked about compromising information. It was in French. I would have brought the soundbite otherwise, but it was in French. There were subtitles, and he was asked about compromising information discovered by the Canadian Senate. He wasn't going to get it through the Senate. So they rush to this press conference. The gal, Freeland, she hurriedly puts together another set of notes, I presume. And all of a sudden, he is singing a totally different tune. This is clip 15.
Canadians have been through a lot, and we have a lot of challenges ahead of us. Let's remember that we're fighting a virus, not each other. Let's work together. After two difficult and painful years, we have a lot of healing to do. And now is the time to be there for one another.
Now he brings up the virus. He didn't talk about the virus at all during the trucker controversy, during the Freedom Convoy. It was all about the Freedom Convoy. They were Nazis. That's how he was trying to bring everyone together during the crisis, by calling them white supremacists, Nazis, saying they had the Nazi flag. Even that was a plant. And then the crackdown, the iron-fisted crackdown last Friday, not even a week ago. And now yesterday he's talking about, hey, we're not fighting each other. I mean, that looks like some fighting to me. We're not fighting each other. We're fighting a virus. I guess it's for your health. You know, taking a few knees to the ribs. It's for your health. We're trying to keep you healthy. We're trying to keep you from getting the virus. Why did he change his tune so quickly? Just on a dime. Because he's feeling the heat. And it's coming from multiple directions. The evil's being exposed. Joel Hilliker had a trumpet brief go out last night. You probably received it by now. God's lifting the lid on this corruption. These are, as I said earlier, with respect to Biden on Ukraine, I mean, these are catastrophic foreign policy failures, and everyone's seeing it. Everyone's seeing it. The authoritarians are certainly seeing it. They're on the march. Trudeau now, he's decided to dial it back a bit. He wants to be an authoritarian. He wants the same powers that Putin and Xi have. He admires Xi. He said it in 2014. I love those basic dictatorships. Well, now he's singing a different tune. Why? The support for him, he's obviously not got popular support. He didn't even have that in the last election. But he's beginning to lose it in the Senate. And who knows what big investors are doing behind the scenes. 2 Peter 1, let me just conclude with a couple more verses. My father has an entire booklet on the epistles of Peter as well. But here it speaks about the return of Christ. So many of these prophesied events, they culminate in that blessed return of Jesus Christ to this earth. But before that, 3.5 years of great tribulation. And in the years before that, the years that we're in right now, a world in turmoil, a dangerous world, a dangerous and violent world. 2 Timothy 3, verse 1. But there is hope. Peter brings that out here in 2 Peter 1. It says, "And this voice, which came from heaven, we heard when we were with him in the holy mount." So Peter was there with, I mean, he saw the kingdom in vision. You can read more about that in Matthew 17. And I mean, this vision of God's kingdom, this vision of Jesus Christ's return and what followed, he saw it. He saw it in vision, and that motivated him. That moved him. He had his mind on the future, not on this dark, hopeless world that we're living in at the moment. It says here, "We have also a more sure word of prophecy, whereunto you do well that you take heed, as unto a light that shines in a dark place, until the day dawn and the day star arise in your hearts." This day is referring to the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. This is our hope. This is our sure hope. He says here that we should take heed as unto a light that shines in a dark place until the day dawn. That day dawning, that sunrise of the wonderful world tomorrow. That's what we're living for. That's what we're hoping for. That's what we pray for. Jesus said in the prayer outline, when you pray, pray thy kingdom come. Pray for God's kingdom. Pray for that kingdom to be set up so that people in nations around the world, so that they don't have to be slaughtered or carted off into slavery anymore or suffering in poverty and malnutrition. Verse 19, again, it refers to the more sure word of prophecy. It is sure. It is certain. Bible prophecy. I've talked a fair bit about it on today's show. These two booklets, The Prophesied Prince of Russia, Russia and China, in prophecy. A third of your Bible's prophecy. Why would you neglect it? Why would you dismiss a third of this blessed book? This book, it says in 2 Timothy, all scripture is given by inspiration of God. God inspired these prophecies. He inspired the prophecy of Ezekiel 38. He wants for us to be able to know and to see what is coming. And at the trumpet, we've got a pretty good track record. Sometimes we don't know all the specifics of it. But the general direction, the flow, I mean, it's all laid out there for us in Bible prophecy. We can't take credit for any of that, that understanding. It's this inspired book. God inspired this book. God inspires those prophecies. Verse 19 again, it says, "We also have a more sure word of prophecy," from the Epistles of Peter booklet. My father says, "How much is this future reality a part of our day-to-day thinking?" How much of it is just a part of our daily thinking? How profoundly do we grasp it? And then he makes this statement. This would tie in with what I got into just yesterday, I believe it was, the subject of faith. My father says, "We must not let the world's faithlessness rub off on us." So many people in this world still in darkness, even as we see this world going up in flames. We know that's just a lead into these prophecies that are to be unfolding right before the return of Christ. He says further, "We must have faith in God's word. Read it and believe it." You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback, you can email the show, td@thetrumpet.com. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.